Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, my guest today is Jim Flint, who is the founder of Local Search Group, a digital marketing agency. Jim is well known and respected as a public speaker, a 3-time author of books including Car Dog Millionaire and Beyond the Tailgate, and is a crypto enthusiast. Today, we're going to be discussing Jim's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Jim.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Great. So just to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So tell us, where are you tuning in from today?
Houston, Texas.
Very good. And what really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
For me, you can see actually the football helmets behind me and the basketballs are probably a good preliminary kind of indicator of somebody who likes to compete, mm-hmm. you know, and help my clients win. And so, you know, whether it was working with Nike originally or Toyota later on, or now having my own agency, it was all about, you know, how could we secure that extra market share? How could we grow the business? And that's really what sustained me through, you know, good times and bad.
Very good. And how did you get into digital marketing?
I think it was the right timing. You know, in 97, I got an MBA, but the company called Google didn't come into existence until 98. So all those things I learned in the classroom were theoretical. Right. But in the day-to-day practice, I just kind of grew up in that era with the internet. Like, I didn't have it when I was in, let's say, elementary school, but it started to come of age by the time that I was in college. So for somebody that likes to, you know, gets excited about growing, it was such a great place to learn and grow and the risk reward about it. And you know, as I came of age, the internet was coming of age. So I'd say it's good timing, really.
Awesome. And yeah, like, tell us about Local Search Group and why you decided to start an agency.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny. I have a lot of great corporate experience, but in corporations, I believe that they're there to prevent you from failing. And so that wasn't always my best utilization of skills, because I was so motivated to help people grow and excited about innovation. But if your job is to protect against risk, which it is in a corporate environment, mm-hmm. then you're not able to serve as a catalyst as often as you're capable of. So, right. you know, I had a really good run. I spent, I think, 7-8, probably all in a decade in corporate America. But it was just like this inner entrepreneur was dying to get out and ready to, like, help other people do things. And so I'm proud that I secured the disciplined experiences that helped me help other people grow. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'll never forget going into different managers that I had, very excited about the internet, talking about the possibility of it before we allocated any money. There were no resources going to the internet. And so much less digital media, right? So it was that beginning that as I was pitching this to the marketing side of the automotive organizations that I was in, that I realized, you know, it's been good, it's been fun, but now there's something much bigger at stake. And so that's when, you know, that move to really kind of retail automotive for a window. And then having done that, went on my own and said, hey, I feel like we are now at the bottom. We're at the bottom of, this was like 2010. And 09 had been a really, really rough year. Mm-hmm. Budgets had been slashed. Advertising people had been part of reductions in force. Marketing was not something people were thinking about. It was kind of like, how do I just survive?
Yeah.
And so it's from that environment that I said, well, I've done all the learning I can do. I can't fathom that it will get worse. If it does, we're all in for a bigger world of hurt than we're already in. Mm-hmm. And so I came at it from a bootstrapping POV and started from that bottom. And now we're here to steal a line from Drake.
That's awesome. And so, you know, when you were first starting out in the early days, what were some of those challenges that you had to overcome?
I mean, literally everything. Probably the biggest thing was culture, believe it or not, just thinking about it for a second, because you go in and however long it takes you to get where you are culturally, it takes you that long to solve it. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, and it can all start with one employee. And so as we were growing the team and things were getting really fast, there was more and more delegation, mm-hmm. right? So autonomy doesn't mean engagement. Autonomy doesn't mean taking responsibility. And so what we had to do, because people were kind of abdicating that responsibility, and a couple of, I'll say it nicely, like people that were toxic were infiltrating the company. And that created a scenario where the people who were aligned with the culture, believe it or not, the power of toxicity is greater than the power of alignment. Mm-hmm. So we went through kind of this real deep dive into culture and who we are and what we stood for. And it wasn't something that came from me, say, top down. It came from collaboration within the organization in terms of who we were and what we wanted to represent. And mm-hmm. so once we had that tightened up, it took about another 18 to 24 months for those people to, you know that that was what we stood for, to see it reinforced, and then to believe it enough to kind of have the people who were being toxic want to leave.
Okay. You know?
And so that cultural definition was a huge game changer.
That's really interesting. And then, so tell us about your culture and how you would describe that.
Well, we basically defined it through the 7 C's and letter C, as people came up with different things that they wanted to be. As I mentioned earlier, competitive was one of them, mm-hmm. right? And another one that we came up with was consistency. You know, even though in a marketing agency, there's always kind of like last minute requests from clients, and there's deadlines and trafficking, and there's the beginning of a month where you launch again, you still need to find the repeatable processes that make what you do consistent, right?
Right.
And so, you know, and then you start aligning with the consistency and the competition. And then you realize that one of our C's, for example, was communication. And mm-hmm. with communication being how we add value to our clients, if we look at it and we're not adding value to the conversation as we speak to the public on their behalf, let's say we're adding confusion to the conversation, then there is no value add there.
Right.
And so we looked at communication as probably the most important thing that it was that we did. And so those are just, you know, 3 of the 7 that the team came up with. And we didn't do it overnight. It wasn't like, hey, we got to do this. We brought in the industrial organizational consultant who walked us through the process, walked us through the steps. And then, you know, I think we originally started with 5, but then iterated over time. And one of them was Code of the Armadillo. And what that meant was sometimes our clients give us really rough feedback. You know, if you go into a creative session and you have soft feelings, you can get those feelings hurt really, really bad. So we would make sure that, you know, we had our minds right to be receptive to the feedback and not listen to the volume of what was said or even how it was said, mm-hmm. but what were the takeaways that could help us get better at the craft. Right? What was it that we were doing? And that was the great irony. The cultural alignment helped us get away from the people who were just looking for a job. And mm-hmm. we started to connect with people that were looking for a career, right? And I've been so proud of all the people that have worked for the company through the years mm-hmm. that have gone off to do things on their own, even with their own family or with their own companies or their own, you know, things that are properly principled. It's been remarkable, really.
That's incredible. And yeah, it's so cool to see that you've just made, you've really helped shape them as a professional just along their journey. And it's really cool to be a part of them as they experience things through their life. So,
you know, that was one of the greatest fears. Like I would have hated for somebody to leave local search group, the company, and not be prepared for whatever it is that's next in their life. Now, it's got to be what they want, not what the company wants, that's next in their life.
Yep.
Some of them have gone on to work for charitable organizations. You know, that's one of our seven C's. It became the seventh C because we want to make sure that we get back to people that were less fortunate than us. And it helped us appreciate the high aptitude people that we were working very, you know, smartly and quickly with. But we had to realize that our work environment wasn't necessarily everybody's environment. And then, you know, one day they say, you know, I don't want to do the launches anymore. I want to give back to a greater good more than what this is. I want to do it for a cause. And so a couple of employees have gone on and had great careers in that realm. So I'm excited for that as well.
That's awesome. So whenever you're hiring a new team member, how do you ensure that they're going to be a good fit with your culture?
So we're going through it right now, and we put a lot into how fast, right? Because we are a speed-minded organization, right? As an agency, it's like, how fast can we turn stuff around? Do it right, but also quickly. And so when we put out the job description here over spring break, I didn't really think we'd get anybody to respond until this week. But there were three or four that responded last week. They were of high quality, right? And now that we're in a virtual environment, it's also about availability. Mm-hmm. So we asked the top three candidates after we looked at it as a team who we thought would be a good fit for this internship deal. And by the way, interns are just as important as founders or just as important as anybody on the team because everybody impacts the culture. And so we're looking for the people that are interested. And then, you know, I've done thousands of interviews, hired hundreds of people. And what I will say is this, at the end of the day, the thing that's most predictive of their success is not the interview. It's not even how quick they respond. It's actually the work history that they have on their resume. And things show through early, right? That happen now in their collegiate years that predict, I believe, future success. So just looking at the background of what it is that's on paper is really an important part of the process. And then the big final thing, like beyond cultural alignment, beyond past work history, it's, can I really be around this person for 8 hours a day? I mean, is that going to be a good thing or is that going to be a bad thing?
Yeah. Yeah. On a human level, do you just like the person and feel a connection there?
Yeah, or even like an hour Zoom meeting, how's that going to go, you know?
Yeah, so true. So I'd love to pivot a little bit and talk about sales. So I'd love to learn about what your sales process looks like and how you're bringing leads into your agency and then closing those prospects.
That's a great question. It's an age old question, and I think I've tried everything. Just so we're on the same page. Over time, I kind of put these in the top three, and this is not pre-rehearsed, but really it's about having inbound leads. And so referrals are huge. Like your existing clients, if you're doing a great job with them, I think it's very fair for you to ask of them, hey, is there somebody else that you know that we don't compete with that you think I could help do excellent work for? Because I want to you better support by growing my overall business. I'm not going anywhere, right, Mr. Client, Mrs. Client, Ms. Client, but I want to be able to support you more effectively, and I need to add a little bit to my book of business. And a lot of times you'll find that they're very helpful in that regard.
Yeah.
The second thing I did, and I'm open to hearing your thoughts too, if that's appropriate for the podcast. Is that something you want to share too?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, so when it comes to sales, I think you just need to get your name out there as much as possible and, you know, just be human, just have, you know, a human conversation. Don't be overly salesy. I'm as cliche as it is, just, you know, try and lead with value, help people out. And then, you know, just try to get on a call with them so that you can, you know, continue the conversation from there. I think you just need to really set yourself up to get lucky by getting yourself out there as much as possible, you know, doing those podcasts, doing those cold calls, sending the emails, networking on social media. It really is a combined effort, I feel. And then also, I think offering, you know, incentives that create urgency is a good idea in sales too. So, you know, if you're able to give, you know, a little bit of extra value, if you, you know, sign on today type thing, that's a great way to just create an incentive as well. So yeah, there's a few tips that I like to use.
No, that's good. And I will just share, I wrote, as you mentioned at the intro, a book that created a lot of interest in the community and still stays popular. It's called Car Dog Millionaire, and it's how to sell cars and make money at your internet dealership. And it's a really good primer even today in terms of how to set up your business. So, and that's not only from like the dealer principal or general manager or general sales manager of a retail operation. It doesn't have to be automotive. It could be a furniture store, mm-hmm. could be a lawyer for that matter. Yep. All the way down to the sales consultant in the store. You know, if you do these things, right? And I hired a comedian to help me write it.
So I love that.
It's my ideas, but I can be a little bit academic at times in a book format, especially.
Yeah.
So I needed to use her skills to help me lighten up, to be a little bit more entertaining and have a little more, you know, bam and pow and wow and zam kind of stuff in it.
Yep.
So it's there, which fits really nicely with the prospects that I want to attract to me, that I want to bring in and work with.
Yeah.
And so I think that was a lot of work at the beginning. But when you think about the idea that you want to market the marketing, right? Because I'm a service agency. I think you might agree with that.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I really, not unlike, you know, the employees on the team, I don't want to work with clients that don't get what I'm talking about or don't care or you get in a real bad codependent relationship in the agency world real fast.
Yeah.
And so I think attracting the right clients is really important too. So I was, you know, my authentic, if not more humorous self than I would otherwise be on the day to day, but it served its purpose quite well.
That's incredible. Yeah. And it all comes down to, you know, you get one toxic client and it can throw off your entire team. It can be such a toxic thing throughout your entire agency. So yeah, you definitely want to be ensuring that you're only bringing on people who are a good fit within your agency.
I have said this often, like one bad deal can also destroy what you've got going. We had a client that we're so excited to pitch for. But when it came time, so you're doing all the pitch work and you gotta pitch to play to pitch, right?
Yep.
And so at the end, we now get to where we're going to negotiate terms after we've done all the work and the media plan and convinced and persuaded. And I mean, all that energy of the organization is there. We all know that it's big. And he then, you know, we're all thinking 15% of the spend. Mm-hmm. Well, they come in at a retainer. And so the retainer offer was closer to 3%, still a big number, right? But this was not a high spend, low demand client. This was high spend, high demand, good negotiator. And so I put together, it was a bad deal. And so what happened was people were stressed out, didn't have enough money to be able to support additional personnel or additional things. The media buy was flat, right? Mm-hmm. And so most of that was cost. The 3% was the software that was required for audits and other extra requirements that this person was looking for. So unfortunately you can unscale yourself if you put bad deals together.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome within your agency?
Well, I do think it's going to be, over time, and maybe this is just experience talking, you just don't want to work with people you don't want to work with. You know what I mean? Like, I want to have a relationship with my clients. I want to have, you know, the ability to help them grow. That's very authentic. I want to help my employees grow. Mm-hmm. But I think there's just got to be this like level of operational transparency. I think trust is a very loaded word, so I move away from that. But, you know, if you need to have it your way, and we do the thing that I call like HIPPO marketing, which is the highest paid person's opinion matters most, then you're probably not a good fit, because when you're classically trained and you've worked at Nike and you've worked at Toyota and you've made mistakes, you realize that you have to have a persona that you're marketing to or talking to, not the emotion of ownership to make decisions, right? Mm-hmm. To do great marketing and to be with Nike, for example, it had to be authentic. It had to be innovative. It had to be performance related to the sport. And so like, if you're off in a different mindset, I know in one meeting one time I got in trouble for suggesting the idea that we put a Nike swoosh on a Santa Claus hat, because that's not sports related. It's not authentic and it's not performance related. It's a cute idea, mm-hmm. right? But as I work with the different clients that I have, if you are a Ferrari dealership and you really want to go after these high-end customers, it's not best to consult your younger son on what looks cool, right? That's not cool. And if you are a very successful business person and you're trying to attract the 25 to 49 year old person with a more moderate household income than mm-hmm. yours, you're not the opinion that matters most. And so until yeah. I can get to clients that are able to get out of their own way, because I certainly have been that person in the past, then it's not going to go well, right? Because once we agree on the persona, that's not just an exercise for me. That's my truth, right? That's right. The trust. Do we yeah. trust that the person we're trying to connect with is that person? And in crypto in particular, I've really gone after like the difference between people that want in the space and the financial future of what that involves versus the people who are scared of all the implications that are out there because of the tax and the uncertainty and the regulatory haze that exists, right? Which one do you want to talk about, the financial future or all the risk? And so if you want to talk about all the risk, you're not going to be a very attractive person. And if you want me to help you grow and you want people to be magnetized, let's get on script with the personas that we're moving toward, and then let's get on script on the people that we're moving away from, because it's incredibly material to the process of your ultimate success.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So I'd love to pivot a little bit and talk about systems that you've used within your agency that have been critical in helping you grow your operations.
Do you, I smile when I say this, because I just don't talk bad about things, but some of my greatest growth experiences have come from learning the hard way. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I learned the hard way was I tried to bolt on top of it's the Google My Client Center, right? So we bought this software program that bolted on top of, and then they ran these algorithms supposedly every 30 minutes to make sure that the budget was maximized and accounted for properly, like all this AI stuff.
Okay.
And what I found was, and we had been in the system previous to this, and I am in the system today. So it was about a year's worth of time where we tried to work through a different enterprise. But what happens is Google changes so frequently, Facebook changes so frequently. The best recommendation I can give to anybody in the space is make sure you understand those platforms intimately. That's what I've done. That's all right. I've done, really, is as those huge enterprises move a different direction, I'm aligned with them. Because as it relates to my clients, what I do is thread the needle through the platform to the consumer. And so if you don't understand the platform, or there's some other thing that encumbrances your ability to communicate properly or spend money effectively, you're going to lose. And so what had happened with this really fancy system that went on top of it, when Google made changes, it took them, you know, several weeks and iterations, and then it turned into months before they got up to speed. And so at the time, Google did this thing where you could actually amplify the bidding by geography or mobile, as two of the key examples that I was, or time of day actually, but those were the two key for me. So if I wanted to amplify a bid by 900% when it was within the geography for my particular client, meaning a $5 max CPC could actually go up to $50, right? Which is really true and near and dear to Google's idea of making money, right? Mm-hmm. Being profitable, because I would be willing to pay that premium. The problem was their system didn't have that iteration included. And so after probably 90 days and me working independently with one client, realizing that they were not going to be able to satisfy that demand, I realized that in a fast changing tech environment, if you have the aptitude and you have the willingness to break down the learning curve, you're always going to serve your client better, serve the consumer better by being in the platform that has the most direct connection. No doubt about it. I don't hesitate one bit. Anybody who and tries to sell a platform on top of a platform doesn't understand that Facebook and Google are not beholden to your addition, right? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. No, that's such a good point. Yeah. And it's something I'm sure a lot of agency owners haven't even thought of. So that's really interesting that you had that experience. It's good to know.
It's probably why I like cryptocurrency too, because Facebook and Google on the back end is highly complex, just like those different elements are as well.
Yeah. So where do you see Local Search Group in 5 years' time?
Yeah. I don't have the answer to that. I used to have a 5-year plan. I used to do a 2-year plan and 1 year. I think more or less now I kind of do a 90-day plan, because after you've been through a global pandemic, it kind of changes your outlook on things.
Yeah.
So I kind of worked with our team, and you know, when it was happening, I said, we have one of the most unique experiences ever in the lifetime of a marketer. Not everybody's going to get this. So we're only in this first week, but you're literally going to reinvent every operational aspect of what it is that our clients do. It's going to require a lot of work, but I don't want you to do it for the work. I want you to do it because you are going to get your next 3 jobs based on the work you do in the next 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you'll have a story that nobody's ever been able to tell before. And nobody, God forbid this happens again, or that it goes longer than 3 weeks. I was kind of short-sighted in that part of it, because it went on, I don't know if we're out of it yet. I think we're kind of out of it, but certainly it was longer than 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of the team, because we're moving from an office space to a virtual environment. They did a great job, and they really did help our clients reinvent themselves. And in the process, they developed an entirely new, operational skill set, a whole new way to market the cleanliness of an organization, mm-hmm. a whole new way to think about retail operations.
Yeah, it's so important to focus on the positives that came out of this experience, because it was such a huge challenge for business owners and agencies dealing with, trying to help all these businesses going online so quickly. It's nice to feel that we are feeling like we're just getting out of the woods here finally. So yeah, we're going to begin wrapping up here, but first we have the Fast 5, which are 5 rapid fire questions. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
The most recent one is Ray Dalio. I think it's called Principles of Nations, mm-hmm. but it's good. And if you read it or listen to it on Audible, you'll realize a lot of it's happening right now. It came out in November of 2021. And so it's hard to unsee once he helps you see.
Wow. Very cool. Definitely got to check that out.
Yeah.
And what does your morning routine look like?
I'm an early riser. So I'm at the workstation, if you will, by 6. And, I do try to keep the discipline of 2 cups of coffee and then have lunch at noon. But, then sometimes work takes me away. So we'll see. And then I do like to work out too. That helps me, maintain some balance. And now that I'm not in the car as much in terms of driving to and from work, I'd rather be on the treadmill a little bit more, staying in shape and doing those kind of things.
Nice. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I think one of the best books I've read on that is with Steve Jobs. And the Real Thick book, he has some issues, but I'll tell you the one that I'm interested in, not because of anything other than this, Bezos. I don't necessarily like either of those guys for who they were. I'm incredibly amazed at what they did, but Bezos always brings, I looked, his run rate on return on invested capital was 40% or greater for, 20 years in a row. So it was not only that he acquired companies, but the way he assimilated them into productive outcomes is probably one of the greater legacies that he actually leaves behind.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
And what is your favorite online tool?
Oh man, I am online. I kind of like, let's see. I don't have, I'm going to say YouTube.
YouTube. Okay.
Here's why. It has changed the way people learn. It's changed the way I do things. I can watch, kind of one of my growth hacks for people is to watch things at 2x, right? Don't have something on in the background. And I'm not talking about watching Netflix at 1.5. I'm talking YouTube on something you want to learn how to do. Turn on the closed caption, focus on the content, take notes on the side, or do a digital diary so you're up to speed. Yep. And if you're really trying to grow and learn, YouTube is the fastest way home. It just, there's so much content out there. And I really enjoyed learning as I grew up and did well in high school and college and grad school.
Yeah.
But YouTube, wow. Like it's so old, but it's so new with all the content that people create on the daily.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that hack of listening to it on 2x as well.
Yeah, but 2x, like, boom.
Laser not, focused not 2X in.
Over here and over there and everywhere, but 2x, like.
Yeah, yeah. And it's true. Taking those notes as well and really, like, yeah, being laser focused, as you said, is that's the game changer.
And you know what? Anytime I've tried to turn something from a hobby into a business, mm-hmm. I will use the time from like 7:30 to 10:30 at night and come up to speed. And this could be with a new client category too, by the way, mm-hmm. right? If I'm moving into a new sector, I can spend 3 hours of real time, but engage with 6 hours of content. And really I'm starting to scale my learning and then ultimately my implementation so much more quickly through that process that it's the best software platform, et cetera, that I could recommend.
Yeah, I love that. I agree. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
One thing I wish I'd known, I don't really have, you know, no regrets. I think my philosophy is to get up one more time than I've been knocked down. And so people may look at things and go, you've done this or you've done that, and this is successful or this is failure. You know, I think in today's society, we're so conditioned to see everybody putting their best foot forward through social media.
Yeah.
That sometimes, you know, don't judge yourself by other people's highlights. All right. Judge yourself, if you choose to, on your willingness to get back up mm-hmm. and your willingness and ability to try again. The greatest successes don't, you know, if you want to play the lottery, go for it. That's great. You might win. You might. But, you know, if all you do is look at the things that people are able to secure from the lottery wins that they've completed, then you're just going to be a really not happy person. And yeah. So I have a tendency more to lean into the things that I can impact the outcomes of and, you know, enjoy those things and try to get better at those things, whether it's work or relationships or even vacations. I know the first vacation I went on with my wife, we went to London, and I had this list of things that I was going to achieve during the day, and I was looking forward to crossing them all off. Well, after day one, she needed a vacation from the vacation. And so, you know, what I changed about my behavior was, okay, I'm going to now write relax on my vacation list so that I can chill out, but still have that sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't good for me and her and the environment. So I look at things like, can I be good for me and client and family and the environment? And if it's good ecologically, then it's going to be great. Right?
Yeah. Oh, such great advice. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jim. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Julia. I appreciate you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.